Information, please. Presented each week at this time by Canada Dry, famous the world over for its fine beverages. Wake up, America. Time to stump the experts and enjoy a cool, refreshing glass of ginger ale. Every week at this time, Canada Dry presents Information, Please. Here's the way we play the game. You send us the questions, and we provide a quartet of mental giants to answer them. You may submit from 1 to 3 original questions with the correct answers. For every question our quartet fails to answer, the sender gets $10 with the compliments of Canada Dry. For every question we use, whether or not it's answered correctly, the sender gets $5. So you can make $15 if our experts miss out, which they occasionally do. Our editorial staff may reword your question a trifle. Don't worry about it. Whenever there is a duplication of questions, Information Please uses the one that was submitted first. All questions become the property of Information Please and should be addressed to Canada Dry, 1 Pershing Square, New York City. Now may I present our master of ceremonies, Mr. Clifton Fadiman, literary critic of the New Yorker magazine. Mr. Fadiman.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, unrehearsed, unpremeditated, uncabined, uncribbed, and unconfined, Information Please wends its merry way along. Now, the experts this evening, facing me at a long table, are the famous F.P.A., or Franklin P. Adams, conductor of the New York Post's Conning Tower, Oscar Levant, pianist, composer, and musical director of the American Way, and John Kieran, sports authority and snapper-up of unconsidered trifles in a dozen fields. These three form our regular trio, and this evening they seem particularly spruce and elegant, which reminds me that if you want to see them doing their best to look like three Clark Gables, run down to the Radio City Music Hall this Thursday, when the first Information Please moving picture short will be presented, and it'll be at your local houses soon, too, I believe. Now, as for our guest of honor, he's a gentleman known as one of the foremost bridge authorities in the world. He's also a first-rate hand at trap shooting, golfing, billiards, dice, practically any game of chance or skill you care to mention at which money can be won or lost. I give you P. Hal Sims. That P stands for poker or pinochle, Mr. Sims.
Philip.
Philip. Now, gentlemen, remember for each question that's missed, Canada Dry rings up $10. I suppose that's a pretty small dough to you, Mr. Sims. And that $10 is paid out to the sender, plus $5 for the use of the question itself. Here we go. The first one coming to us from the nation's capital, from Miss Nettie Mae King. Miss King asks you to tell us what characters of fiction played the following instruments: the violin, the saxophone, the tuba, and the second trombone. Who played the violin? Mr. Levant.
Golden Boy. Joe Bonaparte and Golden Boy.
Good. That'll be all right.
Not fiction, it's drama.
That's all right. Fiction and drama. We'll lump them together this evening. Mr. Adams, another one?
Somebody in a book called The First Violin by Jesse Fothergill.
Where do you get these things, Mr. Adams? You know I don't know whether that's correct or not. I'm sure it's well known. Mr. Kieran.
Sherlock Holmes.
Sherlock Holmes, yes. Mr. Levant.
Humoresque by Fanny Hurst.
By Fanny Hurst, yes. How about Horatio Alger's Phil the Fiddler, wasn't it? It must have been a violin.
He wasn't a union man.
It was only a small violin.
And I should think any one of the fiddlers of old King Cole would be an answer. Or the little pig who played the violin.
No violin and pig.
Wasn't there a violin?
No, there were woodwind instruments.
No violin?
That's out of your realm.
Oh, I guess it is. I take it back. I had an idea there was somebody who played the violin. Well, what fictional character played the saxophone? Played the saxophone.
Fictional.
Fictional.
There was a saxophone player in an old play.
A little vague.
The Fall Guy by Gleason.
Got me there.
It's a very unimportant... Well, I shouldn't say that.
That's all. It's you go ahead. You're sure that he did play the saxophone?
Yeah.
In lieu of any further information, I'll accept that as an answer. I think a more famous character would be Clarence in Booth Tarkington's story and play of that name. Is that right, Mr. Adams? You're
right.
No Tarkington fan. How about the tuba? Who plays the tuba? Mr. Adams.
Man in Mr. Deeds Goes to Town.
Yes, by name, Mr. Deeds.
Mr. Deeds.
Yes, I just want to help you out. That's right. And the second trombone. Second trombone. Second trombone. Never asked for the first. Mr. Adams?
Nanky Poo.
Nanky Poo and the Mikado, yes. Mr. Adams always comes through on Gilbert and Sullivan. Can't fool him. 4 out of 4 on that, gentlemen. The next question from this city, thought up by Mr. J. Fitzgerald. In what 3 games, which may be contested by teams, is an individual score of 69 very good, and then second, very bad, and then third, indifference. In what three games, which may be contested by teams, is an individual score of 69 very good? Mr. Sims?
Well, golf.
Golf. Golf would 69 would be very good.
Be a very bad score at shooting.
Shooting? What kind of shooting?
Well, trap shooting for 100 birds.
Would 69 be bad for trap shooting?
Be a very bad
What's your own score, Mr. Sims?
Well, you can't tell what
This is your chance, Mr. Sims. Let us know.
I can't tell you what it'll be. I don't know.
You've
but
got
I could beat 69.
You could beat 69.
Yes.
He's done at least 70, ladies and gentlemen, at least 70. Well, I have trap shooting down here as, a score of 69 would be indifferent in trap shooting. You think it'd be very bad.
I think
your standards are much higher than those of the other experts here, Mr. Sims. How about Mr. Kieran?
I think 69 would be a bad score for a member of a cross-country team.
How the scores work then?
The man who finishes first is number one. The man who finishes 11 is scores 11 points.
Very good.
They add up the scores according to the place in which you finish. So
yeah.
If a man finished first and his next teammate finished 69, that's 70 points for two men, which would be perfectly horrible.
Well, you have to have a pretty large team, wouldn't you?
Five-man team or four-man team.
Oh, I get it. I guess that would be true. Now, how about in bowling? Would 69 be a...
Ghastly.
A pretty bad
score.
You wouldn't tell us, Mr. Sims, what your score in bowling is?
About 150.
And in duck
And I'm not very good.
Not as... Oh, you say that with just a barely discernible note of regret in your voice.
Yeah. With footballs, I can do 69 in a bowling game.
Thank you, Mr. Levan. Thank you very much. The next question from M. Stillman of this city. That's a very interesting question. The board is asked to dress a man from head to foot by naming songs in which various articles of clothing are mentioned prominently within the title or the lyrics. Now, gentlemen, for the sake of decency, I'm going to ask for at least four songs. Watch yourself, gentlemen. Mr. Kieran, first.
The hat me dear old father wore upon St. Patrick's Day.
Okay, Mr. Kieran. That gives us a hat. Mr. Adams.
Button up your overcoat.
Button up your overcoat. That gives us a hat and overcoat. Mr. Levant.
Vesti la juba from Pagliacci.
Oh, goodness. All right. That gives us a vest, hat, overcoat, and vest. Mr. Adams?
Shoe fly, don't bother me.
Very much, Mr. Adams. That gives us a shoe. I'll make it two shoes, to be generous. Hat, overcoat, vest, and shoes.
I got something added to the shoe, body and soul. No?
Yes, we'll consider those as given.
No?
Those are given. We have to give him articles of dress.
How about, what does he need?
Well, I'll tell you what he needs. He could do with a pair of pants. Mr. Kieran?
I was going to give you the Song of the Shirt by Thomas Hood.
Well, I'd be glad to accept it.
He needs a shirt.
Oh.
You're almost overdressing this gentleman. Mr. Adams.
As pants the heart.
Well, it's a good quotation from the Bible. Not a popular song.
Yes.
Really? Who wrote it, Mr. Adams?
I don't know, but it's a...
You mean that's the
song.
Title of a song?
Oh, yes. Right.
Do you believe that, Mr. Levine? Mr.
Well,
Sims?
I soaked my hat, my coat, and shoes for just one drink of good old booze.
Thank you very much. That fixes us up. I think we've got a hat, overcoat, vest, shoes, shirt, and pants. Anything missing?
You got a soul, too.
And a soul, thank
oh,
you.
Oh, I got one. Lord. Blue pajamas.
I beg pardon?
I don't know the name of the song. Blue pajamas song. I guess I'll have to change my plans.
Well, if you're going to have the man in an overcoat and vest, it seems to me it wouldn't be so good to have him in the pajamas
never
at the same
tell.
Time. How about a... gloves.
Oh, that's easy. You forgot your gloves.
Right, so gloves, old sweet song, Mr. Levan. Either one. So how about...
what?
I think we've got him pretty well set now. There's one article of clothing, by the way, which, if we don't mention, Mr. Levan.
My walking stick.
Yes, that fixes him up. What's
hand me down my walking
stick. No, that's Berlin. You listening, Irving?
What's the song called?
Da 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 walking stick. Da 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 walking stick.
Mr. Sims?
There's an umbrella, too. A rainy afternoon.
That'll
do fine.
There's one article of clothing which you gentlemen have not mentioned.
Slippers.
Well, that's all right. That, too. But without which, it's very difficult for this man.
Tie.
No. Just a belt or a pair of suspenders, gentlemen. That's all. I defy you to give me a song with the word belt or pair of suspenders.
Well, how about brace up or something?
All right, that'll do, Mr. Very good. The next question from O. Cook of Baltimore, Maryland. What do the following have in common? Omar Khayyam Paul Jones, Clyde Van Dusen. What did all those three have in common, Mr. Kieran?
They were all racehorses.
All racehorses. And what did they do as racehorses that gives them another common denominator, Mr. Kieran?
It sounds to me like Kentucky Derby winners.
Quite right. All three Kentucky Derby winners are three-year-olds in 17, 20, and 29.
You did you ever hear of a horse that won Kentucky Derby wasn't a three-year-old?
Me? I don't know. I don't follow the pony. Not the way you do, Mr. Kieran.
I'd bet on Omar Khayyam when he won it.
See what you can do with this one. It comes to us from Harriet Richards of Santa Barbara, California. Involves your knowledge of poetry. Identify the poem from which the following 10,000 are taken. The phrase 10,000. The first is 10,000 saw I at a glance. What poem, Mr. Kieran?
Wordsworth, To a Daffodil.
Yes, that's right. Can you give us a line or two from it?
Fluttering and dancing in the breeze and all the rest of it. I have to begin at the beginning. It'd be too tedious.
And then my heart with pleasure fills and dances with the daffodil.
There.
My period.
Very good, Mr. Adams. Thank you. The next 10,000, which runs us up to 20,000, gentlemen, 10,000 fleets sweep over thee in vain. 10,000 fleets sweep over thee in vain. Kieran again.
That's a poem on the ocean. I think it's Lord Byron's poem.
You're all right, Jack.
Yes, that's right. Wait a minute, I know that, too.
Of course you know it.
Harold? No.
Time writes no wrinkles on thy azure brow. That's the one.
Well, it's from Charles Harold's Pilgrim, as Mr. Levant suggested.
It gives me an inferiority complex, I'm afraid.
It won't last, Mr. Levant. It won't last. 10,000 eyes were on him. 10,000 eyes on him. Miss Adams.
Casey at the bat.
Casey at the bat. Can you give us a few lines in which the 10,000...
10,000 eyes were on him.
As he?
As he rubbed his hands in dirt.
Yeah. Five.
5,000 hands.
Tongues.
5,000 tongues applauded as he wiped them on his shirt.
Very good. All right. Mr. Carl W. Simpson of Cleveland Heights, Ohio, has sent in a question based on songs that were heard reasonably recently, in well-known moving pictures. I'm going to ask you to name the pictures after each song has been played. Let's have them first. All right, Mr. Levant.
That's in Juarez.
In Juarez, yes.
They, on the ads, it says Juarez. Juarez.
How does one pronounce that, by the way?
Well, it's an endless argument. Go ahead, John. How do you ask
all right,
that?
Juarez hell.
I'm trying to give the name of the song. It's,
I beg pardon.
That's La Paloma. I know that.
I hope everybody missed what Mr. Adams said.
Well, John knows the name of the composer. I don't.
Mr. Kieran?
Irradier.
Really?
Y-R-A-D-I-E-R.
How do you suppose he knows those things, Mr. Adams?
That's the kind of music he can play. It's not very hard.
All right. La Paloma from Juarez. The next one.
We'll make it so.
Think that's pretty easy, Mr.
Yeah.
Grant?
That's Wishing from Love Affair.
That's Wishing from Love Affair.
Yes. Irene Dunne with 15,000 school children.
Yes, I think not quite 15,000. How you exaggerate, Mr. Levant.
Well, that's the picture training.
I know. Everything's colossal. The third and last.
That is not Alexander's ragtime band.
No, I'd know that myself.
Oh, well, wait a minute. That was played on a harpsichord.
You have to name the picture.
I'll name it.
Give me
another half hour. A big woman, a large woman played it.
Oh, I think about medium size.
Oh, is it the end of a picture? What's that dark, menacing man? Laurence Olivier.
Go ahead. You've got to name the picture.
Well, what's the matter with you?
Don't try to pry me down.
Laurence Olivier Merle. That's Wuthering Heights.
Wuthering Heights. That's right. It's background music throughout, of
it
course.
It was not background music.
Wasn't it background?
It was played as a solo at the end.
Yes, I think it was also played from time to time throughout the picture.
Really?
I may be wrong. Let's you and I go see Wuthering Heights one night, shall we, Mr. Levant? Ladies and gentlemen, I regret that so far we have been unable to stump these experts even for $10. And so while they're preening themselves on their erudition, we're listening to Canada Dry's Mr. Milton Cross.
Thank you, Mr. Fathom. The old popular parlor game of word association is still popular. You'll remember that in playing this game, one person calls out a word while the players answer immediately with the first thing that comes to their mind. Thus, if I were to give the word grass, I might receive the word green in answer. And I'm quite sure that if I said ginger ale, an overwhelming majority would answer Canada Dry. For Canada Dry is the name most frequently associated with ginger ale. In every corner of the world, the order, Canada Dry, please, will be followed immediately by the appearance of the aristocratic gold-tipped emerald green bottle. It was Canada Dry which first popularized pale dry ginger ale, and its pleasant flavor and bouquet have kept Canada Dry popular down through the years. Next time you entertain, try playing the word association game and notice how many people answer Canada Dry when you say ginger ale. And then, of course, to make the party a complete success, serve ginger ale as well as say it. And I do mean Canada Dry.
Thank you, Mr. Cross. A pleasantly brief message. Done in 64 seconds flat. Now, gentlemen, the next question, coming from W.R. Carpenter of Washington, D.C., has to do with kings. Kings, you must remember kings. What is the power or position of a king in the following situations? There are three of them. In a regency. What's the position of a king in a regency? Mr. Kieran?
Probably in an insane asylum.
Well, that's putting an awfully dark face on it. He might not necessarily be in an insane asylum.
Well, he'd be a non-compos mentis for the time being.
Yes, or merely underage.
It's another version of the same general...
Not quite. You have some youth listening to you this evening, Mr. Kieran.
The king
is underage or incapacitated, as Mr. Kieran informs us, and he has no power. I think there was a regency in Romania, wasn't there, until recently, and then the Crown Prince Michael became the king.
He's back in regency again.
At the moment?
Well, his father reestablished himself. Yeah, that's right.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Well, he's too old to be in regency.
I think that's true.
He's about 18
now. How about the position of a king in a game of chess? Miss Curran.
A king is the one piece on the board that cannot be captured.
Cannot be captured?
Cannot be captured. That ends the game. That's mate when the king cannot move.
It's the
only one that can't be taken off the board.
What can it do on the board, though? What is the power of the king on the board?
King can move in one square in all directions. It also can castle, which no other piece can do, except the castle has to cooperate.
Yes, of course. Very good. All those who understand chess, of course, know precisely what Mr. Kieran is talking about. And all those who do not understand chess need merely write in to Mr. Kieran. He'll be glad to send you a little booklet explaining the game of chess for practically no difficulty at all. Now, the position of the king in the House of Commons would be what? This is the king of the House of Commons in England. What is the relation of the king to the House of Commons? I have to get all three on this, gentlemen.
That's dangerous. I won't try to answer that.
You won't try that, Mr. Levant? Well, since the days of Charles I, the king may not enter the House of Commons. So that no British king since those days has ever seen the interior of the House of Commons. I'm not informed whether this is an advantage or a disadvantage. But that is the case in any case. Now, that gives us only two out of three, which means that Mr. Carpenter is going to get $10 courtesy of Canada Dry. I'm very glad to get you gentlemen down at least once this evening. The next one from Warren C. Johnson of Boston, Massachusetts. With what means of locomotion are the following characters from fact or fiction identified? With what means of locomotion are they identified? The first is Elijah. Mr. Adams.
Chariot of fire.
Chariot of fire and whirlwind, of course, for the story in the Old Testament. The second, Snapper Garrison. Snapper Garrison, Mr. Sims?
He was a famous jockey.
Yes, and what's the story about Snapper Garrison? Why do we remember him?
He was a strong finisher. They call it to this day a Garrison finish. Just at the last he comes
that's
on.
That's right.
A very fine finish.
Garrison finish. How long ago was that? Do you know, Mr. Sims?
At the turn of the century he was.
About 1900. When you were learning your first game of bridge about, Mr. Sims?
Well,
the age of 7 or 8.
around then.
The third, Captain Nemo. N-E-M-O. Captain Nemo, sure.
He had an airship.
Just the opposite.
Submarine?
Yeah. You couldn't be worried. Couldn't be off more than that. Kieran?
Well, I remember the old funny papers, but I've forgotten in which direction he went.
That's
Little Nemo.
Captain Nemo. You're thinking of Little Nemo,
that's
yes.
Right.
Who was the cartoonist, Mr. Adams, who created Little Nemo?
Winsor McCay.
Yes, and who's the Captain Nemo that we're referring to, Mr. Adams?
I think it's somebody in Jules Verne.
You're quite right, Mr. Adams. Don't be so timid. Yes, Captain Nemo rode in the submarine Nautilus in the famous
20,000 Leagues Under the Sea.
That's right, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. I'd call you wrong on that, Mr. Kieran. You mind?
Not a bit.
All right. That gives us only two out of three. losing $10, which go to Mr. Johnson, courtesy of Canada Dry. Now, the following question has been concocted by Mr. B. James of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. The pianist is going to play for us the verses of well-known songs. Now, many of us know choruses. I know a chorus or two myself. But very few of us, I think, ever stop to realize that we don't know the verses of songs that we're all otherwise familiar with. I'm going to ask you to name the songs after each verse is played. There'll be three of them. Let's have the first.
Sounds like waltzing around again, Willie, but that's not the answer.
No, that's right. You saved yourself, Mr. Levant. Mr. Adams?
It might be Yip I Addy.
Sorry?
That whole genre is all the same. It's so monotonous. That's an old-fashioned waltz.
It is, but you have to
not my favorite
song.
Music.
You're giving me a lot of information, but not the title. Mr. Kieran?
My turn to guess. Come Josephine and My Flying
Machine. I'm sorry, Mr. Kieran. It's a very nice guess. The answer is Take Me Out to the Ball Game. Take Me Out to the Ball Game.
That's in Rigoletto.
In your field, too, Mr. Kieran. I'm surprised at you. Let's have the second, shall we?
Not enough. Play the whole thing.
All right, we'll have it again.
What's the matter? Let him play.
Do you want to, let's have a little more of that.
Play the first note of the chorus. The first note.
You're getting exigent. Just the first note of the
first
chorus.
First two notes.
The first two notes for Mr. Levant.
Go ahead.
This is Barton.
Okay.
You got it?
Yeah, three notes we'd all know. It's something about My Heart Stood Still.
That's quite right. My Heart Stood Still, Dick Rogers' song. Apparently, Mr. Levant, it is difficult to recognize songs from the verses, is it not?
Yeah, because nobody sings them anymore. I would have remembered that. That was quite a distinguished song, verse and chorus.
Mm-hmm. All right.
It was their first... No, it wasn't their first
All you
hit,
needed was a hint.
Just the whole chorus. I got it.
It's very nice, Mr. Levant, to hear one composer praising another.
Well, he's one of the best.
Good,
he's
good. Oh, fine. All right, let's have the third and last of these verses of well-known songs. Look of intelligence on Mr. Kieran's face, Mr. Kieran.
Sweet Genevieve.
Are you very sure of that?
Yeah.
Are you sure of that, Mr. Adams?
Yes.
Well, the answer is down by the old mill stream.
Well, it was stolen.
Beg pardon?
Stolen. Same note.
Yeah,
note
well, days note. May come and days may go. We can sit down and sing ourselves.
No, I believe it is down by the old mill stream. Nice. You gentlemen have a rudimentary sense of melody, that's all. Well, we flopped on that one, and Mr. James will get $10, courtesy of Canada Dry. The next question from Romar McNichol of Washington, D.C. is the following. What are the first names of these famous literary characters? The first names. You see, Miss McNichol assumes a sort of familiarity with these characters. The first name of Gulliver. Gulliver, from Gulliver's Travels. Adams?
Lemuel.
Lemuel is perfectly right. The next, Micawber. Micawber from Dickens' famous novel.
W.C.
Mr. Levant. And Mr. Adams?
Wilkins.
Wilkins Micawber, yes. That's pretty good memory, Mr. Adams. Very few people remember Micawber's first name. Faust. Faust?
I know a George Faust. That isn't the same one.
No, not the same one, Mr. Levant. Sorry.
I don't think Faust had a first name.
Be surprised. Nobody called him by it, but he had a first name. It wasn't Bizet's either.
These they never wrote.
Who wrote
Gounod?
Gounod.
There are millions
of
Faust.
Trip me up. Trip me up. Mr. Adams?
It wasn't just call me Al Faust.
I don't think so. No, it was a very simple name. Johann or John. Johann Faust. Little Johnny Faust, don't you remember, Mr. Levant? One wrong on that.
Tony Faust, I know in St. Louis.
Call him up.
It's nice to have all these Fausts brought up for our attention, but the Faust I mean is the Faust, and his first name is Johann. The first name was Scrooge in A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens. Dickens, Scrooge's first name?
Old
Scrooge. Old.
How about Tiny Tim?
No.
Well, they know each other.
Yes. First name is Ebenezer. Ebenezer Scrooge. I've given you a great deal of very valuable information this evening, gentlemen. Ebenezer Scrooge and Johann Faust. Two wrong out of four, making a loss again for the board of $10, which go out to Miss McNichol, courtesy of Canada Dry. All right.
It is known as a garrison finish.
Yeah, we're doing very well. You gentlemen want to stop right now? See what you can do with this one. William Marshall of Harmon on Hudson, New York, sends in the following question. In a baseball game, a player makes five trips to the plate, which practically amounts to commuting. He singles, and he's given a base on balls. He makes a sacrifice hit. He's hit by the pitcher, and he strikes out. This is a pretty busy day. What is his batting average for the game? Mr. Sims, you have it? What were you going to say?
100%.
100%? How do you make that out, Mr. Sims?
Well, the only thing that counts is the hit.
No, he struck out. He has one out of two.
Yes, batting average was 500.
Yes.
That is, he's credited with only two times.
One hit out of two.
Yes, he struck out and made a single. The based on balls, a sacrifice hit, and when he's hit by the pitch, they do not count as times at bat. A little too fast on that, Mr. Sims. Yes, a little too fast.
Usually my fault.
I didn't hear the strike out. I wasn't listening.
Oh, I'm sorry. Perhaps I didn't make that clear.
No, a man doesn't make much noise striking out.
What man doesn't make much noise? Some of them make an awful racket.
That loses us another $10. We're doing beautifully toward the end. Going out.
What's the matter? I answered that.
Oh, no, but Mr. Sims muffed it first. You can't retrieve it, Mr. Levant. I give you credit, but the $10 has to be lost going out to Mr.
Sims lost it in the sun.
Well, let's see. We announce a loss altogether of the very round sum of $50, all lost during the last 7 or 8 minutes. And while our experts are kicking themselves, here's Canada Dry's Mr. Milton Cross.
Undoubtedly, many people in trying sparkling Canada Dry water for the first time do so simply because they know that the name Canada Dry stands for the utmost in purity and quality. And they must like it, for today, sparkling Canada Dry water is the most popular of all club sodas. Now, there are plenty of reasons for this popularity. For Canada Dry water is triple filtered and alkalized, just as pure and wholesome as water can be. And Canada Dry's scientifically developed pinpoint process makes drinks taste better and assures that the goodness lasts. So to you doubting Thomases who say, oh, any club soda's all right, we say, order sparkling Canada Dry water, and we'll take the odds you'll agree with the millions of others who always insist on sparkling Canada Dry water. Now here's Mr. Fadiman with news of next week's guest.
Thank you, Mr. Cross. And Mr. Sims, will you please accept Canada Dry's thanks for coming down and joining the party and making merry with us this evening? Now, next week, ladies and gentlemen, we'll have our two regular experts, Mr. Franklin P. Adams and Mr. John Kieran, with us, and we'll have two guests of honor. One has been with us before, the well-known mystery story writer, creator of the famous Nero Wolfe mysteries, Mr. Rex Stout. And the other guest of honor, equally well-known, is the author of the Pulitzer Prize-winning biography of this year, Benjamin Franklin, noted as a literary critic and historian, Mr. Carl Van Doren. To all our listeners, we say, please send your questions along. If you have a stumper to stump our board of experts, let's have it. There are $5 in it for you if we use your question, and another $10 if we fail to answer it correctly. So you can win $15 in all. Send your letters with questions and the correct answers to Information, Please, 1 Pershing Square, New York City.
Always keep a supply of Canada Dry ginger ale, sparkling water, Lime Ricky, and Tom Collins mixer on hand. You'll find the large family size economical, costing only 15 cents plus usual bottle deposits.